Happy New Year and welcome to the Continuous Delivery Podcast. After a brief break, we are back and joining me today are...
Hino.
I'm Cheesy.
Trouble.
A little rusty on the intros, but no big deal. today's topic is something we just decided to talk about moments before we started recording. And it has to do with BDD or behavior-driven development. And this topic came about when Chaba brought up the idea of end-to-end tests. And then somehow BDD kind of came up. And I think it came up because whenever at least I have been exposed to BDD in the wild, it has sort of been Gherkin, which with the statements of given, when, then, and so on, and the step definitions that implement that Gherkin are usually end-to-end tests, which fire up some sort of UI and then traverse it and then basically call the test true or false. That is by far the most, not necessarily popular, but the most frequent flavor of BDD that I have seen. Not saying it's good or bad. I think it is pretty bad. But Cheesy, I'll start with you. What is good BDD versus what is bad BDD? Because I know the both exist because I've seen them.
Well, unfortunately, the majority of what I've seen out in the wild has been what I would call bad BDD. You know, it's where somebody discovers the given when then syntax and they try to squeeze everything that they're doing into that format. Often when there's no product folks involved whatsoever, but it's just sort of a replacement for their more traditional testing approach. So BDD is really a practice or a technique around trying to build a common understanding, trying to understand how the system works, trying to build a common language. From my perspective, if it's automated or not can be something that the team themselves can decide. Although I have this desire to stay away from end-to-end tests that go through a lot of layers of a stack, unless if it's possible to completely control every aspect of it at every time. And even then, it becomes really difficult. So back to your question around when is it done well? It's done well when it's done with a whole team working with a product folks to try to build a common understanding, to try to make sure that we cover the business's view on how the system should be behaving. And then we can, if we implement it, we want to implement or automate it. We want to automate as much as is continuously repeatable, where we have no flaky tasks. And so sometimes that means introducing lots of mocks or fakes. And so on. So that's what I would label as good BDD. Let me just say one other thing, though. Kind of by the nature of BDD, these tend to be larger steps. You don't write behavior necessarily around adding, you know, a checkbox to a screen, but they tend to be something that's a little bit larger. So a lot of times teams that are trying to do continuous deployment or continuous delivery where they're taking lots and lots of small steps, the BDD feels like an added layer of overhead. And if you find that that's the case, don't do it.
The one piece is really the process of getting to that shared understanding is really crucial there, right? And that's what delivers most value. And another piece is, it's really not about testing the UI. And that's a mistake that leads to an awful lot of bad application of BDD, I find. And that is that people are looking at it, not looking at the behaviors, as Cheesy pointed out, but actually looking at the functionality that those behaviors drive. If you want to do BDD related to, well, first of all, if you want to do testing at that particular level and you want to describe what the test needs to do and then automatically run it, then you don't want to do this on something that can change all the time. Those behaviors, they are fairly static. They don't change all the time. There, as a result, those tests that are associated with those behaviors are not as brittle. If, on the other hand, you're trying to apply the same technique to basically automatically test a flow through an application where you interact with UX elements, then that might become an awful lot more brittle. There's more work in maintaining those tests as well. If there's more work in maintaining those tests, you're going to be reluctant against writing them in the first place and running them. And that's really what you're trying to avoid, right? So again, the conversation around getting to that same understanding is really crucial. Think about the behaviors. Don't get tied into the functionality.
And I would add that one of the most negative patterns of usage of BDD when there are no unit tests underneath, when organizations think that, okay, now we are going to write these end-to-end tests, and that's it. These are our tests, and this can go wrong in so many ways. The most common one, but hinted at that maintainability, right? Because as soon as the application changes a little bit, then suddenly everything has to change in those tests, and soon it becomes a friction point to maintain these tests. So let's assume that in a best case scenario, we have all the mocks, we can control them fully, we can run them. But soon they are going to become such a cumbersome moment in the application development that people will just stop maintaining them because it's going to be so hard to change.
So that brings up an interesting point, which is if BDD is really there to help us understand, some behavior of the system, once we understand it, do we need those tests anymore? Or should they just be simply, once we build it out and we have unit tests everywhere, should we just get rid of those BDD tests? What is the value of them? Or get rid of the automation?
So one piece of value, and I agree, tests should not necessarily live forever. If you're writing your BDD tests well, though, then they kind of describe the behaviors of your system, and as a result, can act as living documentation, right? But then again, that is if that keeps on evolving as well, and that documentation does not necessarily need to always be added to, right? So it's possible that you have 50 tests now, and that 20 of those tests can disappear when you add another 10 to describe another piece of the application. So as long as you keep that somewhat in check, I think it can be valuable.
Yeah, one thing I would add as an implementation detail for the BDD, if you choose to do it, then one pattern which is a very common pattern to avoid to help maintainability is called the page object pattern. Look it up. It creates a one layer of abstraction between your application and the tests. And again, I'm just saying this with lots of caution because yet you are if whoever listening and they decide to go down that path, that's going to help you a little bit. But on the long term, it's still you want most of your tests in your unit tests.
You know, as I hear you guys speak about unit tests and how we sort of say unit tests are underneath BDD, one challenge that I found when implementing them is that when we write the step definitions for each clause, given when then, I've struggled to get reusability out of it. You know, because ideally, I think that if you look at the marketing material for BDD, it's sort of right. You write a particular step, say, given when I create a new account, and the create a new account method is ideally reusable across different steps. Maybe create a checking account or a savings account or a credit card account, whatever it is. And I think you can spend a lot of time trying to achieve reusability in your step definitions, just so you can say every given when I open a bank account is the same, that you end up spending a lot of time trying to make things reusable. And it sort of works against your goal of moving fast and delivering continuously. How focused should developers be on reusability when writing their step definitions? Should there be like a one-to-one mapping between clauses? How should we think about this?
Back in the very, very early days of Cucumber, there were some built-in steps for interacting with web pages. You know, that basically made it really reusable to find a button and click it and that sort of thing. But we learned over time that's a really, really, really bad thing to do. and there were blog posts that were written that said, stop doing that. That actually kind of went away from Cucumber, was taken out and such. What we've learned by writing these is that your step definition code itself should not really be doing very much at all other than delegating to something else that you try to make reusable. Okay, so Chaba mentioned the page object pattern. That might be an example. Zarar, you mentioned about creating an account or something like that. Well, you know, building some reusable code that could do that is fine. But the whole thing about BDD tests as well is that again, let's not lose sight of the goal, which is to build a common understanding across the team to potentially automate that if it happens to be a very stable way to do that, you know, and so on. So if the architecting of it becomes a headache and you're going to spend way too much time trying to get rid of duplication, then leave the duplication there. You know, so I wouldn't worry about it too much.
I want to add for the part of reusability, when you execute a certain function multiple times, for example, you mentioned account creation, for example. One interesting question is what we discussed about mocking versus letting that or hitting that actual system, right? If you, let's say, if you have control over. If you choose to mock it and that mock is very, very on, very, very high up, then you are almost like just running like similar to front-end unit tests. So then the question is, then what's the point having this in the first place? Now, if you let this go fairly low into your downstream systems, and let's say you create that account just for the sake of this conversation, then the question of cleanup comes up, right? Because you have to be able to rerun your test and you have to be able to independently runnable. So now you are building crazy amount of code outside of your application that are taking care of these cleanup steps or taking care of many of these things. So again, you are going into some crazy amount of work. And this is where the rerunnability is and reusability could only happen if you have these cleanup steps. So no matter how you look at it, it's a bit daunting task.
Well, and just to add on to what Chaba just said is that as you go further down, now all of a sudden you need an environment to deploy the code into to run this. So it's no longer a pipeline thing. And so now you've added more complexity. And by the time I reach, even start to approach that point is when I say, forget this. These are no longer the desirable types of tests that I want, at least not in a continuous delivery mode, because I want tests that are repeatable, tests that are not brittle, tests that don't fail, tests that could run in a pipeline.
Yeah. And you all touched on the idea of how this is to create a shared understanding. And it's a shared understanding between both product developers and anybody else on the team. So does it go without saying that just like we do pair programming and mobbing, we can adopt very similar techniques when writing Gherkin, our Gherkin for BDD? Because to me, the way you guys are describing the collaboration aspect of it, it almost makes no sense. In fact, I'll go far as saying it's an anti-pattern for somebody to write Gherkin and the statements in isolation. Can we agree on that?
100%. I mean, that's the number one value of BDD, and that's a conversation that leads to a description of your example, right? But it needs to be a conversation. You can't do that in isolation.
Let me just stretch out just a little bit as well. I'm going to hit straight to something that I've seen way too often. It, yes, absolutely. It's also an anti-pattern for your QA or your testers to take their manual scripts and to all just try to convert them into this format. That's just a complete disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, another similar pattern where the product owner or the BA writes in isolation as part of the acceptance criteria of the story, and then they because they believe that if we write it this way, there's going to be perfectly like almost like a perfect business requirement coverage for everything, and then we can prove it to the business that this works. This is my classic example, right? And we've seen it all, right? Like what was the outcome of it, right?
Has anybody seen a? I have not. a great example of Gherkin being actually used to document the system behavior, because that's part of the marketing material, is that if you write good Gherkin, over time, you are basically describing your system behavior while at the same time testing it. It sounds great, but honestly, every time I've tried to go down that path, I've abandoned it for one reason or the other, whether the language is different or the system behavior changed or the tests are too brittle or all these kind of things. Should we be happy just getting the value out of the collaboration piece of this? And if the tests and the automation comes along the way, that's like bonus.
I think if you get the value out of the collaboration piece, what we've been talking about, right? Getting to that shared understanding, that's more value that you get from not working in any way like this. So if the buck stops there, that's fine. That's I'm perfectly happy with that particular outcome without necessarily needing to automate those tests, right? We try a variety of techniques to ensure that the developers and product and everyone involved in the in delivering some functionality to the end user are on the same page. If this is one of those tools that can help them get there, perfect. I'm not asking for more.
There are some other tools that are kind of tangential to BDD, things like example mapping and so on, that they can also help build that common understanding. And another thing is just the whole team, including the product owner, mobbing. You know, through the mobbing process, you could build a common understanding. So it's not the only way to achieve it, for sure.
And I would add one more to that on the outskirts of BDD's acceptance test-driven development, where we kind of try to write a spec or try to write some kind of a crisper spec for the behavior of a system or the outcomes of certain systems, and then coding towards that or working towards that.
And one use case that I personally have found it useful is, if you are writing, say some module and you want to write tests for it, but as a developer, you want to basically make those tests readable so that you a future version of you can understand it later on, or somebody else can, you can actually adopt Cucumber and Gherkin and kind of use it to replace the general JUnit setup, act, verify pattern. And if you inject it there, suddenly your test scripts read a lot better. Basically, you're taking out the at display name part of it, whatever the JUnit that guy is doing, and transferring that into Gherkin. And that has worked, and it's fairly low risk because there's very low chance that it'll become stale because a unit test will fail and you'll probably fix it.
Right. Yeah. I would just worry about adding additional complexity or overhead. You know, I'm not saying that that's wrong. If you find value in that additional complexity or overhead, then by all means. But I sure would not want to replace all of my unit tests with Cucumber tests.
What do I put on my resume then? I want to put BDD on my resume. How do I put that on my resume?
It does look like there are that. The,
what it is anyway.
Yeah, it does look like the situation that you describe is really a documentation of the behaviors. You wouldn't do that the same as the unit tests. Unit tests are way lower level. But you might actually write those particular tests at the interface level of your application, if you will, or your biggest business concepts. That might make sense in the way that you suggest, but it wouldn't be every unit test.
I'll just throw one more thing out, and this is not necessarily BDD. This is more focused on the unit test side, but we really need to put good descriptions on our unit test. So if you're using an RSpec like unit testing tool like Jasmine or something like that, make sure that your text, you know, it describes something well. If you're in Java JUnit, like you said, Zarar, be on JUnit 5 and create your display names so that it is meaningful. Use nested tests or nested describe blocks to describe things. Because that's a simple way to make our unit tests more useful and more valuable to all of the other developers on the team.
Okay, so I think that we'll leave it at that. Listener, thank you again for joining us. And if you want to be part of the podcast, make sure you join our LinkedIn page. You can add, there's a group going, so you guys can join that. And if you have any topics that you would like us to discuss, make sure you comment there. We also have a Twitter account. It's at ContinuousPod. Again, follow us. And if there are any topics that you would like us to talk through or questions you have, definitely reach out. And we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.